Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, Cyrus, why do you do that? Man, I just want to put on my golf shoes and stomp on that voice. All right. You know my hot buttons, don't you? That's welcome back. 888-914-9149. I promised you, and we're going to go to the phones in a bit. I promised you first, though, we have some audio. If you have children who are age appropriate to go to a summer camp, you definitely want to listen to this story. And even if you don't, I mean, you still want to hear this story. That ties in what I want to play first, which is some commentary by a teacher. She thinks that she's a freedom fighter. She thinks that she's, you know, just striking a blow for human rights. It's ridiculous. But some people actually think this way. And so the first audio I want you to hear is this teacher. It's about 2 minutes long. And like all the other videos, it seems like she just wants to make sure that the world understands that your kids don't really belong to you. They belong to the community, and that the community will decide what's best for your kids when it comes to things like sex. So I will just step aside and let her. She's going to bluster a little bit in her own words. She's angry. She's frustrated. She just doesn't like the fact that parents are saying that they have a right to teach their kids X, Y, or Z, or not teach their kids X, Y, or Z. It really irks her. And Cyrus, she's a teacher, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Isn't she?
That's what it says.
Yeah. So she's a teacher, and she's expressing her ire at parents like me and you, Cyrus, too. Who say, no. I as dad and my wife as mom, we get to decide what our children are going to learn and not learn. And she's blowing her stack. Here's what she says.
This comment has me hot. It's in response to a video that another creator did about the Don't Say Gay in Florida bill that is currently up for vote. And this commenter is saying that, you know, it's their right as a parent to keep their kids in the dark. And my response to them is, you're wrong. Your child is entitled. We as a community are responsible for educating our children with sound and scientific knowledge about healthy human bodies, which includes sexuality. We do this for public health reasons, so that children are empowered with their bodies to make sure that they are kept safe from people who would otherwise harm them, and could also advocate for themselves and making sure that they are getting the care that they need from their doctors, from their community, from their parents and families and friends, to make sure that their bodies remain healthy and safe. If they don't know and don't understand what it means to be in a body with a mind and a heart that loves different than how your parents do, then you're not gonna know that there's resources out there for you as a child, as a young person, as an adolescent, as a young adult. This commenter is wrong.
No, madam, you are wrong. Okay, where to begin? She's seething, Cyrus. You can see it. She's seething.
She's hot.
So, a few things. Healthy human. You notice how many times did she use the word body? She used the word body more than any other word. Body, 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 body. Their bodies, healthy human bodies. Okay, let's, first of all, it doesn't take much to decode what she's saying. To love somebody in a way other than how your parents do, that's code for homosexual activity. Could be code for transgender, probably code for both. I kind of doubt that she's all that worked up about boys and girls getting together. I think she's really more focused on the other things. So one of the things that came to my mind, Cyrus, is she's just on this tear about healthy human bodies. Without getting into any of the details, because this is a family show, that lifestyle that she's advocating for and what it entails is very unhealthy for your body. And I'm gonna tiptoe through the tulips here and try to be discreet. Men, to use the male of the species as an example, who live that kind of lifestyle have massive health problems by and large, sometimes requiring reconstructive surgery, sometimes finding themselves with uncurable diseases that can be lethal, not always, but sometimes. There's also studies, and there are countless studies on things like suicide rates in certain communities and the level of anguish and hopelessness and despair as they may correlate with incidents of suicide. So if you want to talk about healthy human bodies, bodies that are not ravaged by the HPV virus or by various cancers or the need for certain forms of reconstructive surgery and other things related to this issue. Heterosexual married monogamous couples don't have those health problems. They may have other health problems unrelated to that, but you'll notice that sexual and sexually transmitted diseases are virtually unknown among heterosexual monogamous married people. They just are. Now, if something pops up, it could be that something happened that one spouse or the other didn't know about. But by and large, in terms of the general histogram or bell curve, if you were to plot out the incidence of this taking place, in monogamous, heterosexual, married couples, these health concerns, diseases, etc., the need for reconstructive surgeries, etc., they don't really exist in that population. So that's the first thing I'd like to point out, is that this woman, in her misguided nonsense, is actually advocating for children to be indoctrinated in school into various, being aware of various lifestyle options, some of which can lead to extremely unhealthy outcomes. I'll leave it at that. She talks about people who could harm them. She wants to protect these students from people who could harm them. Really? I have a story here, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of it. Well, maybe I will. There's a guy from Meta, which is the new name now for Facebook. Facebook changed the parent company's name to Meta. And I'm just looking for the specifics on this story here.
It's going to be hard to find because they have scrubbed him.
They have. You're right about that. So I have some, here it is. I have some specific information here, and I'll just leave it at this. People who can harm your child. You tell me if this qualifies. The guy's name is, where is his name? Jaron Andrew Miles, Palm Springs. He was caught in a, should we do the Ready, Steady, Go, Cyrus? I kind of think we should.
Yeah, Ready, Steady, Go. This is pretty heavy stuff and not for little ears.
No, it's not. Okay, so fair warning, parents. This is not something your children should listen to. High school age, maybe, yeah, but below that, no. So turn the radio down for the next 2-3 minutes if you need to, or have the kids go play in a different room. All right, Cyrus, do the honors.
Yeah, ready, steady, go.
Okay, so this guy, his name is Jaron Andrew Miles, Palm Springs, California, and he was caught in one of these, like, to catch a predator scenarios where there's this group of people, two in particular, and I think they're based in Indianapolis, and they set up stings for child predators. Well, I mean, he's an adult, and he's preying upon adolescent boys. So this has been posted on YouTube. You can find it on Twitter if you're interested. Predator Catchers Indianapolis is the name of the group. And they snared this guy, and they have him on camera. It's like they confronted him in a, it looks to me like a hotel room. He thought he was luring a teenage boy to his room. He thought that he was talking to a 13-year-old boy. And they confront him with all the things that he said and wrote, et cetera, et cetera. And he, you know, he's like a deer in the headlights. He's scared out of his mind, and he's admitting to all this stuff. And he was in charge of a big portion of Facebook's outreach. He had. You can read the article. Andy Ngo is the guy who broke this story, or at least is reporting on it on Twitter. My point is, here's an example of a guy who's influential and powerful within Facebook, and he's on the side, like those people at CNN, the producer for, I think it was for the Chris Cuomo show, his main producer got ensnared the same way. But in this case, it wasn't with adolescent boys, it was with young girls. And he had this whole cottage industry on the side where he would convince, as if this were even possible, he would convince mothers to allow him to meet up with their 9-year-old daughters, kind of thing. That was a story that sort of came and went. You didn't see much reportage on that in the mainstream media, but there's another example. So this guy here from Facebook, and as it's being reported, he's accused. And from the video that you can see, it seems to me as though he seems to be admitting to it, thinking that he was going to have this liaison with a 13-year-old boy. So back to this misguided woman who was talking about people who could do harm to them. These are the kind of people who could do harm to them. And they're actively out there seeking to do harm to them. The other thing, too, is she's talking about their bodies. What about their souls? Now, I don't know if that enters into the equation for people like her. I don't know if she believes in the soul. I'm guessing she, I don't know. Does she believe in the afterlife? So she's incensed that you parents, that you might say that you have the say as to what your children can learn or be shielded from learning in school. She's just really angry about that. And that ties in now with the summer camp thing. So the summer camp thing, this is a breaking story. Now, you just heard the teacher. She's in the classroom. She's trying to indoctrinate the kids. She's hot, as she says it, because she just can't stand these parents who are saying that their kids shouldn't be learning about the stuff that the guy on Facebook wanted to teach the 13-year-old kid he thought he was speaking to. Boy, did he want to teach that kid some lessons. And she is outraged that parents want to prevent guys like that from teaching 13-year-old boys those kinds of lessons. Do I have it straight, Cyrus? Am I missing anything?
Yes, that's perfect. And it doesn't even stop there. These kind of stories are happening more and more frequently. I mean, you saw the story of the camp. It was like a summer camp.
We're going to that now.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not going to that camp. That's for sure.
Nope. Neither are my kids.
Yeah, your kids should never set foot in that. It's Camp Pali, by the way, Pali. So this is, you'll have to tell me what it's courtesy of. It's a news reporting in Southern California. So to set up the story, there's this camp. It's in the San Bernardino area. And it involves underage girls. And I don't mean like 17-year-old girls. I mean like young girls, young girls, whose parents sent them to this camp thinking that everything would be hunky-dory, and it wasn't. Here's what happened.
Oh, and this is, I was just looking, this is from KTLA.
KTLA. Okay, thank you.
All right, here we go.
The parents tell us that their children came home from camp. They were asking a lot of questions about gender and pronouns. The parents then reached out to the camp director, who told them that counselors, biological males who identify as they, them, are permitted to spend the night in cabins with the young girls.
No parent should feel the way I feel after knowing what could have happened to my daughter.
Upset by the sleeping arrangements at a school-organized science camp.
I contacted the school and I asked them if they were able to confirm that there was not a man actually sleeping in the same cabin as the girls. They were not able to confirm that.
The parents say their fifth grade girls told them some of the biologically male counselors at Camp Pally in San Bernardino identified as they, them, and spent 3 nights sleeping in cabins with the young girls.
They're asleep. They use the shower. They go to the restroom.
Camp Pally confirms, per California state law, we place staff in cabins they identify with. Parents say they're not accusing anyone of a crime, but they are angry the school district did not let parents know about the policy. A spokesperson told us the district takes all complaints and concerns seriously and is currently investigating. These parents say they just want others to be informed of the policy so they can make decisions for their own families.
It's awful that children had to even experience this in fifth grade camp. If I was aware of it and I had initialed something saying that this was going to be done at this outdoor science camp, I would have kept my child home.
Yeah, so those parents insist that they should have been informed about this policy before they sent their kids off to camp. And now they want the school district to step up. They want them to inform the parents of the hundreds of other kids who were also on that trip. We're live tonight, Los Alamitos. I'm Sandra Mitchell, KTLA 5 News.
Okay.
This comment has me hot. It's in response to a video that another
creator
She's
hot.
Did.
She's this teacher's
what about the
hot
parents.
Are you kidding me?
Well, here, this is the nub of the issue here is that she's furious. This is the teacher who's in the classroom. I mean, she could easily have been teaching these girls who are at this camp where you've got these dudes, adults, adult males. And just let me pause here for a second. If an adult male, Cyrus, wanted to have, let's say, access in proximity to young girls, and he said, well, I identify as they, them, and that's enough to say, oh, okay, you identify as they, them. All right, well, sure, you can sleep in the cabin with those kids, sure, with those girls. Why would somebody want to do that? I mean,
the young girls,
they're asleep, they use the shower, they go to the restroom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sensing a pattern here. Why would an adult male want to do that unless he had something? You know, it's all starting to come clear to me now. Unless there was some, I don't know, ulterior motive, maybe? I don't know. But it kind of looks like that, doesn't it? So not to put too fine a point on it, but you see that kind of insanity going on, which means that there were adults, allegedly adults at the camp who were like okay with this, who when they were doling out the assignments for who stays in which cabin with which kids, two dudes or however many dudes there were said, well, we identify as they, them, so we would like to sleep in the cabin with the girls if that's okay. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Sign off on the clipboard. So there are people, allegedly adults in authority, for whom this was okay. You had the freaks themselves who wanted, for whatever reason, to be in the cabin with those girls. You've got the parents who are outraged, as they rightly should be. That's the voice of sanity right there. That's the component of the real world, the parents who are outraged. And then you've got the teacher who we just heard from a minute ago, because she's outraged that the parents are outraged that that kind of thing should even bother them. And she's in the classroom forming the young minds of these very girls. Maybe not the same girls, but she's in the classroom teaching these students that their parents are the ones who are wrong for objecting to adult dudes signing off as they, them, so they can sleep in the cabin with the little girls. Am I missing anything, Cyrus? Is there something about this story that I haven't quite put together? Because that's what it looks like to me.
I am so mad I can't even talk because I'll incriminate myself.
maybe better not right. to talk then. So you may say, well, why are you telling me? Well, I'm telling you this because if you have kids in school, this is all around them. If you have kids in public school, even worse. God forbid that it should have infiltrated into Catholic schools, but sad to say, there are some examples that I have known about where even in that environment, this kind of thing goes on.
Is there a parent on the planet that would have okayed this?
I'll bet you there are, and I'll bet you if that teacher that we had heard from, if she's a parent, she might think that it's...
Well, I wonder if they'd be surprised then when something really terrible happens mm-hmm. that they'll never, mm-hmm. ever stop thinking about.
Not to mention, why would any normal adult male want to do that? And I emphasize the word normal. If you're a normal adult male, why would you... Well, you wouldn't, because you wouldn't be normal if you wanted to seek out the sleeping quarters of the little girls. So it, at every level, it just reeks. And it wouldn't be the kind of story I would want to share with you if it weren't so prevalent, if it weren't so widespread and all-encompassing. That's why it's so important to be on guard against freaky people like these. Because they are out there, and they will have their way if you allow them to, so don't allow them to. I don't know what else to suggest. Just don't. And if you're looking for a good summer camp, you might want to say, by the way, do you allow counselors who identify as they, them, to sleep in the cabins with the kids that they identify with, even if they're not biologically the same sex? Do you allow that? And if they say yes, or, well, you just hang up the phone or close the browser. You know, because that right there should be sufficient evidence that this is not a camp you want to send your kids to.
This is so frustrating, Patrick. And I just had a talk with my daughter, and she says in her school, she's seventh grade, that it basically is if you're either gay or you're homophobic. There's no middle.
That's what they're teaching the kids.
There's two camps. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not a fun topic.
No, not a fun topic. Not a topic that you or I enjoy bringing up or talking about. It's not the kind of thing that
sick.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing that I want to harp on. But I mean, in a way, Cyrus, it's like this. It's like being on the deck of the Titanic. And it hasn't hit the iceberg yet, and you're the guy on the deck trying. You're shouting for attention. Look, there's an iceberg. There's an iceberg. Turn, don't hit it. It's either that or the iceberg has already been hit. And now the question is, how do we get people to the lifeboats? Because if it's already hit and the ship is taking on water and it's doomed, well, then the thing to do is to try to alert people. Right? Hey, everybody.
Get to the lifeboats. Women and children first.
Right. Well, how do you define women?
Yeah, I just threw you a softball.
Yeah, so all the dudes on the Titanic who said, well, I personally identify as a woman, so get out of my way. I want into that lifeboat. Yeah, so let's just leave it. It's gross and reprehensible, but it's the kind of thing that people need to know about, and it brings us no pleasure at all to have to raise it. You were about to play something. Go ahead and play it. Why don't we go out to this music? We'll go out to our break with a little Titanic music. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a new free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Hey, Sarah's. You saw that weird thing that the Mars rover saw, the Curiosity rover, rather, saw on February 13th. What do you make of that picture?
It looks like a Martian slipper.
Or a, like a really thick spatula.
Yeah. It doesn't look like it belongs there.
Yeah, you're right. And it doesn't, it's a picture from NASA. NASA.gov is the source, apparently. At least that's what the picture says. It looks too smooth and too, I don't know, like designed, if that's the right word for it, to be natural.
It looks like carved wood, but it's made out of sand, at least, I guess.
It's interesting. I saw this on Twitter, and so you'll see it if you look around for it. But, of course, all the people are jumping up and, oh, it's, you know, it's just this or just that. One person says, sorry to burst your bubble, but it's just wind erosion. And they say it's an exact match. No, it's not. It doesn't match.
It's not an exact match.
But sorry to burst your bubble. People like that can be very annoying. Not that I'm saying that this is anything. Who knows what it is? I don't know what it is. Is it possible that it could? Is there life on Mars possible? Yeah, it's possible. But it looks like a kitchen implement or a ray gun or like a weird high-heeled shoe or something. I don't know.
I don't know what it is. Aliens, right. Man. Could be a high heel. Right. Could be like some kind of...
So you're not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. You know, by the way, Richard Dawkins, when he was interviewed what's his name? The guy he's an economist. He played the teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. What's his name? I always forget his name. Ben Stein. He was interviewed for a movie that Ben Stein did called Expelled, about how God and the idea of God has been thrown out of public schools. And he interviewed the famous Bueller.
Yeah,
Ben Stein. He's a good guy. I sat a row ahead of him on an American Airlines flight. I didn't bother him. But other people said that to him. They said, Bueller, poor guy.
That must have gotten so old.
Could you imagine? No matter where you go, people say that to you. So anyway, so he interviewed Richard Dawkins, the famous atheist, who thinks that you're ridiculous if you believe in God because that's just a delusion. And you're superstitious and anti-scientific and probably prone to violence. Those are his stock and trade comments about Christian theists in particular. So Ben Stein interviews him, and he asks him about, well, where did human life come from? And he sort of presses him to the point where he says, well, it could have been aliens. You know, he says it could have been aliens who came here and seeded this planet with life and moved on. But of course, you know, where did the aliens come from would be the next question. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Philip in Chicago. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Patrick. So I have a question, because my religion book says that you can go to restaurants on Sundays because it helps with your family's relaxation. So I want to know what's your take on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The commandment to keep holy the Lord's Day, which we observe on Sunday, involves making time for God, especially, and time for rest and relaxation. And for many people, getting a chance to go have a nice meal on a Sunday is a form of rest and relaxation for them. So, yeah, I would agree with that. Philip?
Yeah.
So, there you have it. What do you think?
So I'm just saying, I just don't know what... Because, like, there's a thing where, like, if you're a Sunday shopper, like, the thing where you, like, help in the sin of the shopkeeper, but then there's a controversy of where you make the restaurant workers work on Sunday if you go to the restaurant.
Well, there's no sin if the shopkeeper is open on Sunday. He's not committing a sin thereby. It may be that there's a necessity for that. I mean, take, for example, something that's not optional like a restaurant. Take something necessary like a police officer or a fireman or an airline pilot or a doctor who delivers babies. They work on Sunday too, and it's not a sin for them. So the church's teaching is that we should avoid all unnecessary work. And in the case of somebody whose employment requires him to work on a Sunday, it's not ideal. And I've always advised my kids, Philip, when they were getting jobs as young adults, you know, to try to do everything you could so you didn't have to work on Sunday. But if it was impossible because they needed you or the kind of work you did had to be done on a Sunday, that they weren't committing a sin by doing that. It's when you use Sunday for work that you could do some other time. you know, that it would be a problem. But the church certainly doesn't say that if you go to a restaurant on Sunday that you're causing the people who work there to commit a sin, either in a store or a restaurant. Does that make sense, Philip?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I can help you. Thanks for that question. Let's go now to, actually, I'm not sure if we have other calls ready to go. So, Cyrus, a little advice here. Do some of these other calls, are they ready to go?
I'll start picking up.
Okay. All right. 888-914-9149 is the number. As I said, I've got a lot of things I want to share with you. I have a couple right here. One, I told you about the guy from Facebook. That's a story that will get posted if you want to know more about it. And that'll be posted on our Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. I saw this article and I thought this was rather unusual. And I think they probably crafted the headline for that very reason so that people would read it. How worried should you be about dying in your sleep? This is from the Wall Street Journal. And I guess in light of Bob Saget's death, he was only 65 years old. And although it's still unclear what exactly happened to him, the back of his head was caved in. And that does not seem consistent with the claims that there was no foul play. That seems to me to suggest foul play, but I don't know. They haven't said yet what's going on. But it opened up a broader question about people who might die in their sleep, and they give some examples of what can cause that. So stroke, seizure, sedative overdose, sudden cardiac arrest. Apparently that accounts for 90% of sudden and unexpected deaths that occur at nighttime. A sudden cardiac arrest. People at most at risk for sudden cardiac arrest during sleep are those with known heart disease, such as coronary artery disease or lung disease, and also obstructive sleep apnea. And that apparently is a very widespread problem, reaching pandemic levels. A lot of people have sleep apnea where they stop breathing for a short period of time over and over again throughout the night. The study that's cited in this particular article in the Wall Street Journal, sleep apnea apparently is estimated to affect 1 billion people around the world between the ages of 30 and 69. Researchers estimate that 80% to 90% of U.S. adults with sleep apnea remain undiagnosed. They say it's detected earlier and more often in men. Several studies show that a person with obstructive sleep apnea's risk of sudden death is higher from midnight to 6 a.m. compared with the general population. Those with obstructive sleep apnea can stop breathing anywhere from 30 to 60 times per hour of sleep. The lack of oxygen raises the heart rate and blood pressure to increase the risk of sudden cardiac arrest, which carries a 90% chance of death. During sleep, the body is less able to respond to symptoms such as choking on fluid from the lungs or changes in the heart rate. Dr. Jack Flyer, he's a cardiologist based in D.C., he says, if I'm standing up and I have a 10-second pause in my heart rate, I'm going to fall down and pass out and make a big thud and someone is going to hear it. But when you're sleeping, you just can't respond to yourself and your own symptoms. Generally, sudden cardiac death accounts for an estimated 15 to 20% of all deaths worldwide. I didn't know that. 15 to 20% of all. Now, that's not all at nighttime, but in terms of people who just keel over as a result of the heart stopping. So maybe it's worth taking a look at this. So the doctors who are quoted say, maintain a healthy lifestyle, eat healthfully, exercise regularly, get plenty of sleep. If you feel that you might have sleep apnea, if your wife tells you, honey, you stop breathing a bunch of times each night, well, maybe go in and have that checked. You could do a sleep test and have them check that out.
This is real. My father-in-law had this, and for years we'd be playing cards. And, mm-hmm. you know, the middle of the day playing cards, and he'd fall asleep in the middle of a hand. He'd just be really? Sitting there falling asleep. And then he finally went in, he found out he had sleep. And then he was falling asleep while he's driving home.
Oh, no.
And he's just constantly falling asleep. But at night, he wasn't sleeping at all. So he went in for the sleep test, and he had sleep apnea, and they ended up giving him this little machine that he puts on at night. And mm-hmm. And he said it was really hard at first, but... it ultimately made a giant difference, and he sleeps at night, and now he's not falling asleep during card games or driving home from, well, he's retired now, but it's made a huge impact on his life.
Is that the machine that you wear a mask? I think they call it a CPAP machine.
CPAP, yeah.
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 And it helps keep oxygen flowing.
That's right.
Asleep.
Yeah, he was a snorer, and his son, my brother-in-law, they would put me in with him when I would come and visit before my wife and I were married. And so I would have to sleep in this room with him. And the first night I was with him, I thought that his snoring was so loud, I thought he was joking. So I was like, ah, ha, ha. And then he just kept doing it. I'm like, what? Wow. This is real? I've never heard anything like it. And he ended up, you know, years later, getting on the machine, and it's changed his life as well. So if you are sleeping with someone that is a crazy snorer, these can help.
My father-in-law has one, and he'll be 90 on his next birthday. And he's had one for years. Maybe that's why he's turning 90.
Right.
Because he's, you know, he got that dialed in pretty early. Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, I don't snore at all, as far as I can tell, because I've never heard it.
Yeah, where's Nancy? Nancy, let's confirm this.
Yeah, well, I wanted to put it out there because, you know, it maybe not surprisingly, but it was shocking to me how many people may actually be affected by that. My dad's dad, my paternal grandfather, died in his sleep. And that was a thing that actually kind of caught my eye, even beyond this whole idea of the sleep apnea and all that. It's just the idea of dying in your sleep. And I just wanted to say this about that. Now, my grandfather died in his sleep when I was a little bitty baby. I never knew him for that reason, because he died when I was about 6 months old. And as I recall, I think in his case, he had a brain aneurysm. So he went to bed that night, kissed his wife goodnight, you know, turned out the light, said his prayers, turned out the light, went to sleep, and he never woke up. And it was, of course, very traumatic, very shocking for his wife and family, for my grandmother. But I've often thought about that, and I've wondered, you know, it seems to me if you are ready to go, if you're in the state of grace, if you pray and love the Lord and you receive the sacraments and you know, you're seeking to do God's will and you're sorry for your sins and all of the above, I honestly can't think of a better way to go, quite frankly. I mean, there may be more merit there would be more merit if you were diagnosed with a serious illness and you had some time to prepare and think about it and offer up your sufferings. Those are all good things in an eternal sense. But in terms of just death itself and the rigors that often attend to it, dying in one's sleep seems to me to be about the best option out there. Because if you're ready to go, wouldn't that be interesting, Cyrus? You click out the light, you say your prayers, say goodnight. Next thing you know, you wake up in eternity. And there was no commotion. You just wake up in eternity. Well, I'm dead. Well, that can be a good thing, it seems to me, if you're ready to go. I don't wish that on anybody, but if I had to pick.
Hint, hint.
You're only sleeping? You're only sleeping. Yeah, I get it. Beatles. Love it. This is a better song, by the way, than the Titanic song you played a little while ago.
Well, that's up for debate.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I take that statement back.
So anyway, you'll get that posted, right, Cyrus? For the
I will.
Who are
yep.
interested?
I'll do it right now.
Let's go to
Break.
Teresa. Oh, you know what? You're right. Teresa, I'm sorry. Stand by. I'll come right to you right after this break. That's why you're playing the music. Now I get it.
There okay. you go.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Real life solutions you can believe in.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, I've got some good news I want to share with you before we go to the phones. This is being reported this morning that the Pope has issued a decree confirming that the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter, the FSSP, can indeed continue to use the liturgical books in force in 1962. What that means, to de-jargonize that, it just means that the Fraternity of St. Peter, Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter, has been given permission to continue celebrating the traditional Latin Mass at its parishes, etc. So I retweeted that. If you're interested in seeing it, I deem that to be very good news. I'm very happy to see that. And I'm sure it brings a lot of consolation to people who love and appreciate the beauty and the majesty of the traditional Latin Mass. So you see the article that I cited, or rather retweeted on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. So let's go to Teresa in Illinois. Sorry about that false start, Teresa, but you're actually on the air now. Welcome.
That's okay. Hi, Patrick. I'm a longtime listener, and I just have a question. Mm-hmm. I went to an all-women's college. I'm 47 now. My mom went there, my sister, and we're very dedicated to the college. Mm-hmm. And just in this past fall, they announced a big announcement that they opened a LGBTQ plus room, okay, in the social hall. And, you know, it's got the rainbows and they showed pictures of it. And I guess the sisters at the college approved it. Mm-hmm. I called the school and just tried to get as much information as I could. So overall, you know, they call it a safety room and a safe room, I believe. And overall, I was really upset about it. And I decided after researching it to withdraw funds from the college. And mm-hmm. my reunion's coming up this year. I decided not to attend my reunion. And, you know, I explained to the school in an email what I had come to my decision there, which I felt pretty good about. Mm-hmm. And then I had to tell my roommates, who were also going to the reunion, we've never missed a reunion together, explain to them, they wanted to know, why aren't you going? And I explained it to them, and they pummeled me. I mean, they could not believe that that was my reasoning. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a Catholic college. My parents, mm-hmm. you know, sent me there. I paid for partially, you know, the college. I ran track there for 4 years. Very, very dedicated to the school. I've endorsed people, you know, other friends' daughters of mine.
So are you wondering what to do now that they've come out with this nonsense?
Well, I wanted to hear what you think about these rooms. Like, do you think there's any merit to them when they call them an LGBTQ plus room and they call them a safe room? Because my roommates think that they're necessary.
Here's my take on that. The safest place for LGBTQ people right now is everywhere. Everywhere is the safe place for them. In the media, on TikTok, on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Catholic colleges, major corporations, major airlines, major businesses of all types, the public space. That is the safest place for them. It's not so safe for people like you because, number one, you're a hater. And you disagree with people's lifestyle, so that makes you unacceptable. I mean, the tolerance only goes one way. There's no tolerance for you. There's no diversity for you. And they're going to judge you from here to kingdom come in the name of being non-judgmental. So, no, I don't think that a special room is necessary to keep people in that category safe because they're safe everywhere. It's you and your ideas about, you know, things like traditional marriage and such. You're the menace. You're the one who should be looking over your shoulder. You're the one who is going to be judged and maligned and all of the above because of your beliefs. So if anything, it's people like you, Teresa, and I would be in your category as well. We are the people who need a safe space. We need a room that we can be kept safe. They don't. They're safe everywhere else.
That's funny because that's exactly what their response to me was, you know, do not judge. You know, I at the end of the conversation had to say, you know, I don't believe you're accepting me and where is my safe room? So it's interesting right. that you just said that same thing. What would be your response to them? How do you?
Well, I would say here's what I do. And this is something anyone can do is you want to get a few things out in the open first before you play your cards. So I would advise doing something like this. Well, you know, this is a very important topic, and I just want to tell you right up front, and I'd like to know from you right up front if diversity and tolerance are important to you, because they are important to me. I believe in diversity. I believe in not being judgmental, and I believe in tolerance. And I need to know, how do you feel about that? Have the other person, give them the opportunity to say this, and they, of course, will buy into that to the hilt. They'll trip over themselves in telling you just how committed to diversity and tolerance they are and just how much they don't like people who are judgmental. You want to get them to commit to that first. Then you play your cards, and then you say, well, I personally disagree with that lifestyle, and I don't want to give my my financial donations to a college who's going to promote it. Then when they turn the guns on you and say that, well, you're being judgmental. Wait a minute. I thought you said that you were against being judgmental, and here you are judging me. I thought you said that you were in favor of diversity, and yet you can't accept my diversity. I have a different way of looking at the world than you do, and you won't accept that. You want to silence me. You want to marginalize me, and so forth. So it doesn't mean that it will stop them from doing what they're going to do anyway. They're going to do it anyway. But at least they will see the hypocrisy of all these empty statements that they will be very happy to say up front about how they're committed to tolerance and diversity, etc. And then when they show that they're really not committed to tolerance and diversity, at the very least, you have the pleasure of watching them see you see their hypocrisy. So you get a little bit of entertainment value out of it, even though it's an unpleasant situation. But that's the long and the short of it, is that they're being hypocritical. They demand tolerance, they demand diversity, but they don't really mean it. And it only goes one way, as you've seen.
So I love that. I really do. They have taken the position that it's just a room that they can feel safe in. It's not promoting their lifestyle.
Ask them if they would be willing to fund a traditional marriage room where people who don't accept the gay lifestyle can have a room where they feel safe to sport their flags and emblems and promote traditional marriage between one man and one woman. Ask them if they would be willing to have that kind of a room. And in the name of diversity, of course, would they be willing to do that? And then just watch them try to watch them say no, and with a straight face try to maintain this fiction that they are committed to diversity. Because they would never allow anything like that. Under no circumstances would they allow that.
I love that. Because right now I feel that I'm not accepted. You know, and I try to talk to them about the word acceptance. And that acceptance can be it's a gray area. It's not just that you're accepting them. They want you to agree with them and their lifestyle. Yep. They're not just okay with you walking by them in the hallway. You know, they want you to agree with it. I that's what I feel. And I was trying to support my beliefs. You know, I'm Catholic. I'm raising my girls in the Catholic faith, and we do everything we can. They go to Catholic school. We do everything we possibly can to make sure they are raised, you know, in the Catholic faith and with Jesus Christ. I just think they were so harsh on me about it that...
I hope you took some pleasure in saying to them, I hope it came up in the conversation, you will never, ever see one red cent from me again. I'll never support this school until and unless you stop being socially irresponsible and you wake up and you stop persecuting people who have a different way of looking at the world, because you are the epitome of intolerance and judgmentalism, and you are clearly anti-diversity. And until you stop being those things, I will never donate any money to you again. And I'll tell all my friends who went to school here and my relatives to stop donating to you as well.
Right, right. I also took another angle, which was, you know, there are women that are very, you know, promiscuous that I went to school with in the college and were proud of it and had no problem being promiscuous. And I said, where's their room? You know, people were mean to them. They didn't treat them well. Where's their room? Where's their safe room? I don't know if that was a good angle at all, but.
No, you're learning how to do this. That's good, Teresa. So I would say it's far more likely that those women will get eventually a room of their own before you get a room of your own to promote traditional marriage. I mean, I don't think that will ever happen for you, but yeah, it could happen for them. you know, to celebrate their diversity. Hey, this is my lifestyle. This is what I do. I want you to celebrate it. I need a room.
So. Well, I'll tell you, I've been looking into like the University of Mary and everything because of your show and your advertising.
Good.
You know, I need to explore different colleges. I have two girls, and they were absolutely going to my college. And now it's like everything's changed. You know, the whole world's flipped around.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, talk about throwing good money after bad. You know, it's bad enough that you now have to look back on this sordid legacy of the money that you and your parents spent on your education there. And now, to if you were to send your daughters there, you know, to see that it would just continue to reinforce that kind of mindset. Yeah, the University of Mary, absolutely. Check them out. Christendom College, absolutely. Check them out. Thankfully, there are some really good alternatives to the insanity that's going on in those college campuses. So I wish you well,
Teresa. Do you think it'll be reversed at all?
I don't know. I don't really know. I mean, it's hard to know how bad things can get before things completely fall apart. And I don't like to ponder that eventuality, but something's got to give. It can't continue like this indefinitely. I just don't know how long the timeline is. I don't know if it's a 50-year trajectory to impact, or 100 years or 5 years. I just don't know. I'm almost afraid to find out, Teresa, if you ask me. So we'll keep praying and asking the Lord to give us the courage and strength and to speak the truth in love. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.